This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
I'd like to call the Senate Ag and Natural Resource Committee to order. At this time, I'd like to greet the listeners that are on the internet. I'd also welcome all the guests. Appreciate everyone that's taken time to visit our committee. I'd also like the pages to come up and introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about themselves, and tell us a little bit about your future. Don't be afraid to sit in the chair.
I'm Keelan Thompson. I'm from Webster, and I'm not sure what I want to do with my future yet.
Me neither.
I'm Anna Schrader from Howard. I plan on running for a state FFA office, and if I receive that position, attend SDSU for a year and then graduate from Dakota Wesleyan with a nonprofit administration degree.
Good for you. Thank you. We'd like to remind everyone to be sure that you turn your cell phones on to silent, and if we have a violation, they'll provide jerky for the entire committee the next time, and that includes the audience, so today it would be rather expensive. I would like the secretary to call the roll, please.
Senators Blair.
Here.
Ewing.
Here.
Clum.
Here.
Otten.
Here.
Soholt.
Here.
Foster. Heinert?
Here.
Youngberg?
Aye.
Kamak?
Here.
Everyone's present.
We have a quorum. At this time, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Second.
Moved by Senator Soholt, seconded by Senator Clum. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are approved. I'd like to remind anyone that plans to testify, make sure that you've signed in at the podium and make sure you sign in legibly. It'll make our job a lot easier up here. Also, I'd like to remind testifiers that any handouts that you might have, I want you to be sure and use our very able pages. And any questions that come before the committee will be addressed through the chair. And at this time, we will consider the bills. First bill that we're going to consider is HB 1073, and that's to revise provisions regarding the killing of certain birds and animals from an aircraft. Would anyone like to speak on that behalf of that bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Great to be with you today. Much better inside than it is outside. A little brisk out there. This issue was brought to my attention actually a year ago at a Cracker Barrel. We have a predator control district in Gregory County, and Butch Rolfe is the name of the gentleman that kind of takes care of that. They had purchased a drone, and they had used it a few times to go out and try to find some dens, coyote dens, to deal with them in the spring. Well, it was brought to their attention that that was not legal to do, and so they had to ground the drone. And so then starting last fall, I had a conversation with the Predator Control District. GFMP was there as well, and we decided, let's see what we can do to move forward. Now, obviously, drones are aircraft and regulated by the FAA, and so there needs to be some work done on that end. But we also had to do some things to put it in place so it could be used, and so in that instance. So that's the purpose of this legislation, is to make it so that if somebody wants to use a drone for predator control January through September 30th, take out October, November because of the big game hunting season, and then in December again, they could use it for that purpose. Not that they can shoot from that drone. That's not legal at all. But if they want to spot a den, spot a coyote, fox, coon, whatever, they're able to do that and then able to go get them on the ground. So that's pretty much the basis of it. It's something that's very much needed. There's a lot of our farmers and ranchers that deal with damage from predators, and I think this could really help. If we could go out and get some dens, I think it would really make a huge impact on our predator problems. So with that, I will stand by for questions.
Mr. Leader, would you take a moment to introduce yourself for our internet listeners?
Oh, sure. Sorry about that. Representative Lee Quam, District 21.
Thank you. Are there any further proponents?
Good
morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Tony Leif. I'm director of the Wildlife Division for the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. I'm here this morning to offer department support for House Bill 1073. As Representative Quam mentioned, he contacted us late last summer, about this issue, and we worked with him to craft the language that you see here in House Bill 1073. 1073 would grant a reasonable exception to the prohibition of using aircraft, which includes drones, to locate coyotes. With the continuous advancements in drone technology, these devices would provide a valuable tool to producers to aid in coyote control. So just to be clear, the allowance would be for all predator varmints. And as defined in Codified Law 4111, the definition of terms, that would include coyote, wolf, gray fox, red fox, skunk, gopher, ground squirrel, chipmunk, jackrabbit, marmot, porcupine, crow, and prairie dog. If any of you have ever used some of these better drones, and I know Senator Plum is one of those, you know how well they can spot animals on a landscape. And so I think the exception that Leader Quam mentioned of having a prohibition in place during the months of October and November would address the concern that these devices would be used to locate big game animals under a pretense of attempting to spot coyotes. Again, as Leader Kwan mentioned, it's important to note that the provisions of the Federal Airborne Hunting Act also govern the use of drones, and some potential issues with overlap with the allowances in this bill will still need to be addressed and cleared with the Fish and Wildlife Service, which is something that we will do with passage of House Bill 1073. But it's also important to note that there are allowances that have been made with the Federal Airborne Hunting Act to allow airplanes to be used to spot game. In particular, some of you may have heard that in Alaska, for example, some of those fly-in hunts, if animals are spotted while flying into some of those camps, as long as those animals are not pursued that same day, the knowledge of the location of those animals can be used on subsequent days to maybe go out and pursue some of those animals. So there are allowances out there, and we're hoping that we can get that cleared with Fish and Wildlife Service once this is approved. Lastly, I think it's really important to note and emphasize here that the exception contained within House Bill 1073 is only for locating or spotting these predator varmints, and in particular coyotes. You're still not going to be able to use a drone to take, concentrate, drive, rally, or stir up any wildlife, including predator varmints. It's solely for the purpose of locating those animals for later pursuit, should someone want to do that. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to entertain any questions that I might be able to help with, but ask for your favorable support of House Bill 1073.
Thank you for that. Are there any further proponents? Are there any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Chris Hessel. I'm the Executive Director of the South Dakota Wildlife Federation. We're in opposition to this bill as it's written now. We aren't against the act that it's going to create, but we'd like to see it further a restriction on public property where the drones aren't used on public lands. There's enough use out there on public lands in this state that it would just create another conflict in our opinion, and we'd just like to see an amendment to exclude public lands in the use of drones trying to find varmints. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further opponents? Are there any further opponents? Seeing none, would the sponsor like to have opportunity for rebuttal?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lee Quam, I have no no problem with exclusion of public lands. As a matter of fact, I tried to get an amendment done. I was not able to get it done in time. And as from my perspective, you know, you pass this out, it would certainly be a very friendly amendment to put on the floor of the Senate. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the committee? Senator Sowell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is, it's either for the prime sponsor or for Game Fish and Park, I'm not certain. So let me get my question out there. This just seems like a reasonable accommodation in predator control. The question that I would have is the inclusion of September. And the reason for that is archers. And when there, it was testified, so I wanted to talk to someone about, the question is, why was September included? Because our big game archery season starts in September. So I don't know who wants to answer that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sowell, very good question. I would tell you that that was something that we discussed with Representative Kama, trying to identify what the best months are to exclude. Now, if you're talking about the firearm big game seasons, you've got them almost all covered within October and November, with the exception of muzzleloader hunting in December. However, there is an archery deer hunting season that's going on in September. And as we talked through that, we came to the conclusion that the utility of a drone to locate deer and then pursue those with a bow and arrow would not be as feasible or as easy to do, because you still have to get within this very close distance, and that there really wasn't going to be much of an application of that, whereas a drone could be really valuable to spot something over a hill, just to get on top of that hill with a firearm that could take that animal at a very long distance, where that utility would come into play much more. So it really didn't seem like there was a big concern with that. And quite honestly, even the fact that a drone, this is not something somebody's going to be able to sneak out and use without having a lot of people being able to see what they're doing. So with those two factors in mind, really felt like addressing those primary issues in October, November, when most of those firearm seasons were going on, was the greatest area of concern.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Senator Otten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Game Fish and Parks again. These drones, I've seen pictures of them. I've seen video that they've shot. I've seen them when they've come over my property, and I don't quite like that. My question is, are these GPS coordinates that are being sent back to the individual that they know where it is, or we've got somebody with a drone that's out there and now I'm after the game?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Arnold, I'm not sure exactly how the drones would be used. I think there's a variety of ways. I think the most effective means is probably going to be those drones that have a camera on them, and you can identify, or you can see where your drone is. In fact, the regulations stipulate that you're supposed to have visual contact with your drone whenever you're flying it. So you can see where it's at. You can see what the drone is sending back to you for video of what's on the ground, and that would be the context under which I would think that they would be utilized.
Are there any further questions by the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sowell.
I would have a question of the prime sponsor. So, heard the explanation about September, but I still am struggling with the big game, and I get the whole thing. I understand how hunting works, and you know that you can't use a firearm in long distance and moving mm-hmm. animals. But just out of respect of our archers with big game in September, the capacity of drones to locate, move animals, even for the next day, and you know, a drone can get low enough to move them and disrupt animals. So would you consider it a friendly amendment if we ended it in August? When you look at the goal of this is to, you know, reduce predators and nests and eggs, and it seems like mm-hmm. you would have plenty of months to get that done.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have a problem with that, but you need to remember also that, number one, you can't use a drone for that. That's illegal. Even if this would pass, you cannot do that. So that would still be illegal. You cannot use it to move animals or disturb them or herd them or whatever you want to do. I mean, that's illegal no matter what. So, but I would... You know, if the committee would decide to do that, I don't think it's that big a deal, because the main months we are going to be dealing with are May through August, most likely. You know, when they're small, when they're denning up, and you know, January, February through there. So if that's what it takes to get this passed, I certainly wouldn't have a problem with that.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions by the committee? If there are no further questions at this time, we will close public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Heiner.
Mr. Chair, I agree that we probably need an amendment to exclude school and public lands from this bill, and I would just as soon we do that here in committee rather than on the floor. I don't know if it's possible if we can get that language drafted and possibly just hold on to this till maybe the end of the committee meeting and then take action on that amendment. I mean, I don't really want to do it on the fly, but I really don't like amending things on the floor of the Senate.
Okay. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I would be perfectly willing. Amanda has it on her desk, and she just got out of committee, so I would assume she's working on it now. No? You did that? Oh, I thought Amanda did. Well, I guess I'm wrong.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kwong, it was passed on to me.
So. Oh, okay.
Okay, so if I could, let's... have our staff give a little input on this. Do you have some ideas? So, on the advice of our counsel, she's saying there are some other little style and form things that would be appropriate to take care of also, and I would agree. So, it would be the recommendation of the chair that we defer this action on this until the next committee meeting. Okay. All right. Yeah. Everyone good with that? All right. So as of what we're going to do is we're going to defer action on House Bill 1073 until, I believe, the next meeting is the 12th. Is that right?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Are we going to be placing another month in here? A different month?
That would be up to one of our committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I will also bring an amendment to change September to August.
Yeah.
That we can determine if that's something we're interested in.
Okay. All right. So in the interest of bringing a clean bill to the floor, we're going to defer House Bill 1073 final action until February 12th. I believe that's next Tuesday. So this time we will move on to House Bill 1075. House Bill 1075 is to revise certain provisions regarding the authority of a conservation district and governing boards.
Getting the sponsor. I sent a
page. Well, we'll be at ease for a moment while we get the prime sponsors here to represent the bill. I'm going to go ahead and move on to HCR 1001. So while we're waiting for the prime sponsors to get back on the other bill, and that's supporting the governor's effort to fuel the state fleet with premium E30 fuel. Does anyone wish to speak to that?
We we need to get Jack.
Okay, and that's all right, because we kind of sprung that one on you.
Do you want me to start without him?
Well, no, we've got, we're going to do some procedural jumping jacks here, and we're going to jump back to the previous bill. It's that time of year.
Appropriations and said he would come right up.
But okay, that'll be good. Okay, again, we will at this time, to make it clear, we're going to hear House Bill 1075. It's to revise certain provisions regarding the authority of a conservation district and governing boards. Is there anyone that wishes to speak on that issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members of the Senate Ag Committee. I am Roger Chase, District 22, State Rep. I was the prime sponsor for this bill on the House side, so I think I can address most of what needs to be addressed. This deals with soil conservation districts across South Dakota, and for most of you, you may not realize there are 69 soil conservation districts throughout the state of South Dakota, and that's kind of strange considering that we have 66 counties in South Dakota, but some counties actually have two different districts within their county. The way the law is right now, if a soil conservation district wishes to merge, consolidate, join with another county, it requires the registered voters of those two counties to sign a petition. We need 10% of the total registered voters in those counties to merge, dissolve, whatever the case might be. In my situation, I represent Beadle and Kingsbury County. That would require 1,332 signatures. Not a big deal. But for those of you that are in Minnehaha and Lincoln County, if those two districts wish to merge, it would require 15,171 signatures. To all of you, that would be enough signatures to put a constitutional amendment on or initiated measure and vote on it across the state of South Dakota. This has been in law since 1937, so we're just trying to update the situation where it makes it more feasible and allows it to become a situation where two counties could merge or dissolve. In Pennington County, there is two districts within Pennington County. It would still require 7,203 signatures just to bring it to a public vote or to bring it to the public's attention. What House Bill 1075 does is it simply allows the board of directors of those soil conservation districts from two adjoining counties to basically make a motion that they wish to merge or dissolve, and then they would set a date for a public hearing 30 days later. And then the members of the soil conservation district would vote at the next general election. So let's say, for example, two counties wish to merge right now. The two board of directors could make a motion or resolution to merge. A public hearing could be held anytime between now and within 45 days, I believe, of the next general election, which would be in the fall of 2020. And then the people would decide whether they would like to merge or dissolve. The people are always going to be the ones to make the final decision as they elect to do so at the next general election. So that's basically what 1075 does. And I'll stand by for questions.
Are there any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Angela Ehlers. I represent South Dakota's conservation districts. I apologize. We seem to have lost Senator Nostrup.
That's all right.
Okay. We'll proceed without him. As Representative Chase indicated, this is to try to clean up some law that was passed in 1937. I imagine in 1937, 10% of the active voter registration in a county or conservation district wasn't quite what it is today. And we actually did... Oh, may I yield to Senator Nostrup?
That would be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Chase already left, just to let you know. Representative Chase already left. Mr. Chairman, I feel like I got to the movie late. I'm not sure what's occurred in the movie, but I think I'll just stand down unless you've got some questions.
You just need to identify yourself before you stand down.
Okay, thank you. State Senator Al Norstrom from Brown County in Aberdeen.
Thank you.
Here on behalf of House Bill 1075.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Angela Ehlers with the Conservation Districts. This law has been, like I said, in place since 1937, and life has changed. We're not asking to take out the 10% portion. We're just asking to give the boards the opportunity to initiate the action on their own. Lincoln and Minnehaha counties did consider this summer. That's how we found this. And they're going 17,000 signatures. That's more than you need for a statewide, get something on a statewide ballot. And it just seemed crazy. The other part of this, if you look, I handed out a sheet that gives the procedure and current, I just summarized it. At the bottom, there's also one that talks about our conservation district standards. In 1977, there was laws passed that each conservation district has standards for sediment and soil erosion. And those are what set the base for what we consider a violation of erosion control. Those are pretty much based on the soil survey. And I know over the years you've heard a lot about the soil survey. They were started long time ago, and NRCS with the advanced technology now is improving those soil surveys so that they're becoming more detailed. They're becoming much more technological. We're learning about how to separate complexes of soils. The current process, though, to update our standards is the same as it is to merge. We'd have to have 10% of the signatures of the active voters even to consider updating our standards to meet the soil survey, which we also think is a little onerous and a little crazy. I'm sorry, I shouldn't use the word crazy, but okay, I really do think unique. So this would also allow the board to initiate the process and hold the public hearing. So again, the public is there involved. The board then would decide whether or not to adopt a change in standards, or, and if they did not, it could go to a public vote. So that's what we're trying to do with this law, or with these laws. And on the back side, it does show you what 10% of the active voter registration is in each county. So I would stand by for questions.
Are there any other proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Seeing none, I believe we'll waive the sponsor rebuttal and we'll move on to questions by the committee. Are there any questions by the committee? Seeing none, we will close this portion of the testimony and close the public testimony and move it back to the committee for discussion and or action.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Klum.
I move do pass.
Been moved by Senator Klum, do pass. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Otten. Is there any further discussion?
Hi, Mr. Chair. I feel this is a good common sense measure that ends a crazy practice.
Thank you for using that. Unique, yes. All right. Any further discussion or comments? Seeing none, at this time, the motion is due pass on House Bill 1075, made by Senator Klum, seconded by Senator Otten. All those in favor will say aye. All those opposed, same sign. Nay.
Senators Blair?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Klum?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Soholt?
Aye.
Foster?
Aye.
Heinert?
Aye.
Youngberg?
He's excused.
Kamak?
Aye.
The vote's unanimous.
The vote is unanimous. Do pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I move consent.
And Senator Klum moves consent, is seconded by Senator Heinert. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
We'll move on to the floor. House Bill 1075 will move on to the floor under the consent calendar. This time, we will move on to HCR 1001, supporting the governor's effort to fuel the state's fleet with premium E30 fuel. Is there anyone that wishes to speak to this bill, this resolution?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm here today to ask for your support on House Concurrent Resolution 1001. This is a concurrent resolution supporting the governor's efforts to fuel the state fleet with premium E30 fuel. Just a little background on this. First of all, auto owners report that they get greater power and better performance, and reports have been validated by the E30 challenge from Glacial Lakes Energy. If you do not know about Glacial Lake Energy, it is located up in Watertown, South Dakota. This bill would also help the farm economy here in the state of South Dakota, and I'll just give you a couple examples. One, Glacial Lakes, combined with a couple other subsidiary operations that they own, purchased 90-plus million bushels of corn per year. They produce 257-plus million gallons of renewable ethanol per year, produces 820,000 tons of feed products and distiller grains per year, produces 33 tons of corn oil, and employs 119 people. So you can see the economic advantage that this would be for the state of South Dakota. This also has fuel, has cleaner air quality, so it's good for our environment. And as I stated, it's good for our economy. It's good for our farmers in South Dakota versus Saudi Arabia. This is an ask for the transition of all state vehicles to burn premium E30 fuel. So I ask the legislature and I ask this committee to support the governor and have our state fleet burn E30 premium fuel. And I ask for your support on this, and I will stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Senator, if you would identify yourself. You failed to do that at the beginning. Thank you.
I'm sorry. My apology. I'm Jack Kovac. I'm the senator from District 13, and I am the sponsor from the Senate on HCR 1001. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mitch Richter. I represent the South Dakota Farmers Union. We support this bill. On February 19th, we'll have South Dakota Farmers Union Day in conjunction with E30. Glacial Lakes will be here to talk about E30 and its benefits. This summer, approximately in July, the E30 challenge from Glacial Lakes, we will have driven 100 million miles in South Dakota on E30 with zero failures of engine contributed to gas. So we are very supportive of the governor's proposal. It's roughly 4,000 vehicles in the state fleet that travel 13 million miles a year. So we would encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponents?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chairman, and the Senate Agricultural and Natural Resources Committee.
If you would identify yourself. Yeah.
My name is Carl Perry, and I am the prime on the House, and I'm from District 3, Brown County. And long story short, this is a Me Too. I think we should be doing this. State Affairs, House State Affairs passed this out 12-0. The House floor passes 67-3, 67-4, and we think it has great merit. And I'd like you to join Senator Kovac and myself and the people of South Dakota in support of Kristi Noem and E30 and vote yay.
Thank you for that. Are there any further proponents? Are there any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Are there any opponents? Having no opponents, we'll waive the sponsor rebuttal and we'll move on to questions by the committee. Senator Soholt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming, it's a great idea. Just wondering if there's any financial accommodation to the fleet of vehicles that are state vehicles to be able to accommodate E30.
Mr. Chairman. If Senator Sokol, Carl Perry, District 3, House, and pretty good guy.
Okay. Anyway.
Wait a minute.
Just thought I'd throw that in there. Okay. Your question again is?
My question is to accommodate the entire state fleet using E30, are there changes that need to be made to the fleet that would have a financial impact, or is this a transitional, you know, as vehicles term out? I mean, not every vehicle can accommodate E30.
Correct. And the answer is
Mr. Perry, through the chair.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Correct. It is designed with a transitional basis. The things that are really good about E30, all the things that Senator Kolbeck mentioned, but one of the things is the cost for E30 is less. It costs less money to buy it. So if it costs less money to buy it and it generates equal to or better than what we have now, it seems to make really a lot of sense. Plus, the other part of that is as far as repair, there are no major ones. We haven't, Glacier Lakes went through their process and they didn't have any problems whatsoever with any of the engines. So at this point, we would say no problems, it's a go.
Senator Sokol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I don't think I asked my question very well. I apologize for that. I'm curious about the fleet of vehicles within the state. Do they 100% accommodate E30 at this time? If not, how are we going to get there so that, you know, if we're mandating E30, is there a financial impact for vehicles that have to be changed immediately? Just help me understand the business plan.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. It's a transition of the state vehicles fleet to the use of E30, and it already has begun. And it's not going to happen to absolutely every vehicle, because if it's a diesel, E30 is not going to work. So they're basically going to transition everything they can. There are some older model vehicles, but I'm not sure the state has any of those older model vehicles that may have a difficulty. The difficulty that people experienced was on E10, but this is E30. E30 is a cleaner burning fuel. Does that answer your question?
Senator Sokol, could I restate your question? I believe the question she's asking is there any cost of modification to the vehicles in order to accommodate E30?
My answer is no.
Senator Sokol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if we could have another person come up and maybe just clarify. Certainly appreciate the representative's answer.
Mr. Chairman, if I might. Representative Sokol, I've talked to Scott Bollinger, the Secretary for Bureau of Administration. He is in charge of the fleet. Currently, in three locations in South Dakota, we have E30 now. The challenge for him is to make it available in places like Phillip and Timber Lake and those types of places. So if there's a cost involved, it may be there. But currently, any vehicle 1984 or newer will operate on E30, and if the state has vehicles that are older than 1984, we're probably in trouble. So that's the best I can answer your question.
Follow up?
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so in just you're saying there may be costs in distribution of fuel, and so is that something that cost would be borne by the people that actually have the gas stations, or is that something that the state has to be involved in providing financial accommodation?
I think that is what Mr. Bollinger is working on right now, working out the logistics of how that would be rolled out.
Follow up? Okay. So at this point in time, we're just saying we're going to use E30, but there would be no further appropriated money on distribution methods without it coming to the legislature. I'm just trying to understand.
I'm not aware of any bill that would appropriate money for this program.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Senator Blair.
Yeah, just to follow up, I just want to clarify in my mind, so any vehicle, I mean, I've got vehicles that are newer, but I didn't know could use E30, but they're 10 years old. Any vehicle since 1984, if it's not a diesel, obviously, it's okay to use E30. And can these vehicles, if E30 is not available, say they're in winter and there's no station that has E30 and they need fuel, fill up with something else?
Mr. Chairman, you're correct. If you're in winter and there is no E30 available, certainly E10 would be available in winter. You could certainly use that. As Representative Perry stated, the test that Glacial Lakes did in Watertown in conjunction with the Boys and Girls Club to push E30 and get people to use it, anytime there was a complaint about E30 maybe being the cause of failure in an engine, it was always determined either using the Watertown Technical Institute or the car dealers in Watertown that were part of the program. It was determined that it was never the cause. The gasoline, the E30, was never the cause of the failure. So there have been other numerous tests around the country, and their E30 is good to use in all vehicles. Flex fuel vehicles, older vehicles, it's fine. You can use it in yours. And on the 19th, we're going to give you some e-bucks. There's three places in Pierre that you can get it, and we're going to encourage you to do that on the 19th.
I will. Thank you. I appreciate the answer. That does clarify it.
And if you would, introduce yourself.
Mitch Richter, South Dakota Farmers Union. Thank
you. Senator Heiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who would be available to answer this, and maybe it's in your conversations with the commissioner. Are we going to keep track of the gallons used or the that we're using E30 in all of these vehicles? And where I'm going with this, in years past, I received a pickup from Dodge Rodeo. And for that first year, we had to keep track of terrain, weather conditions, you know, what we were driving, where we fueled up. And it was just to kind of monitor how this pickup performed. Are we going to be doing something similar so that, you know, we know? Or is this just we're going to put E30 in and all pat ourselves in the back?
Mr. Chairman, Mitch Richter again. I don't have the answer to that other than I'm sure you could track the number of gallons that would be, you know, delivered and used.
Okay. Are there any further questions by the committee? I do have one question, and that's is there a comparison on miles per gallon of E10 to E30? Is there a difference in your performance there? Does anyone know?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jack Kobeck, District 13 in Senate. According to the studies that were performed by Glacial Lake Energy, that the mileage between E10 and E30 was equivalent. So there was no loss or gain, specific loss in mileage using E30. And if I may take a little liberty, Mr. Chair, certainly. I would like to answer a question I think that Senator Soholz asked about, would it be a cost to the state to supply this E30 to independent gas stations or service stations around the state that do not handle it? Being in the industry I'm in and servicing quite a few service stations, the cost of putting another fuel blend into those stations is the cost of the operator or the chain account that handles the service stations. They have the option of putting E30, E10, E85, regular premium, super premium, and diesel in. So that would not be a cost to the state to make sure that these different independents supplied that E30 throughout the whole state. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Are there any other questions? Any other questions?
Senator Otten. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got to be part of the task force on ag on NCLS, and always used E10, not really was too sure about going beyond that point. I heard some stories. Anyway, they had answered all of my pertinent questions that I ever had on going to ethanol. One of the things that they brought up, that where you get this fall off on the newer vehicles from, say, an E10, and then we're jumping to E85, has to do with the chip inside of the vehicle itself, and that can be reprogrammed. So the computer itself is looking at it, and it's taking the variance in between those two points, whether I'm running premium E10 or whatnot, and it's there's where you get your fall off. And they were saying that actually, if you brought it in, computer, and, you know, told the individual that's this is all I'm going to run, they could make their adjustments there. Said all that to come to my favorite pet peeve, and I didn't know I'd ever have a pet peeve on ethanol, but being up here long enough, I guess you can have a pet peeve, and it has to do with when you go to fill up your vehicle. My vehicle that I just bought actually has E0. I can run premium gas, whatever I want out of it, and then it goes to E15. There's my pet peeve. If you could just get Congress, this is E30 from all the stuff that I know is fine. If you can just get Congress, just place an E30 on that little gas port. Then when you picked up your little precious warranty book and you read in there, and it says right in there that you can't go beyond this, what's stamped on that, I can't go beyond that. There's my pet peeve. Again, something caused by upper feds not allowing us, just a simple one. It would take, what, a 50th of a second to stamp that on your port, E30? And then when I picked up my little book, I wouldn't have to call Ford and have conversations with them, and then everybody scratching their head and emailing back. No, the port says just E15. That's all we can do for warranty. You have just listened to my pet peeve. Thank you very much.
Everyone is entitled to one. At this time, we'll close public testimony and move it on to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chair, since I just went through a little pet peeve rant, do pass.
Okay. It's been moved by Senator Otten and seconded by Senator Blair. And is the... I would ask my counsel, is that the proper verbiage for the motion for a concurrent resolution? Just do pass? Okay. All right, thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Do pass on House Concurrent Resolution 1001. Is there any further discussion? Senator Heiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief, but hopefully in our discussion, we've brought out that I think we're all supportive of this, but we would like to see some real data once this comes into place. And I'm thinking of if, you know, whoever handles our fleet, if they would put a little checklist or a little folder in the council, and as a state employee leaves and drives, goes about their business, they're marking down, you know, something to the effect of what the conditions were and when they got back and what that mileage was. And then maybe next year we can come back and say, hey, we saved a bunch of money, or, you know, this might have cost us. I just don't know once we start to expand this to the entire fleet of South Dakota vehicles. So it's just a suggestion. It's not a mandate. But in the future, if we get a question, then we would have some data.
Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the motion is due pass on HCR 1001 by Senator Otten and seconded by Senator Blair. The secretary will call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay.
Senators Blair.
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Klum?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Soholt?
Aye.
Foster?
Excused.
Heinert?
Aye.
Youngberg?
Excused.
Kamak?
Aye.
The vote's unanimous.
The vote is unanimous. So with that...
Mr. Chair, move consent.
Okay. With that, HCR 1001 passed. And there is a motion by Senator Klum to move on to the consent calendar, seconded by Senator Heinert. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? We'll move on to the consent calendar. Thank you. We will move on to Senate Concurrent Resolution 6, urging the President of the United States to make agricultural exports a priority and to protect agriculture products from all future tariffs. Welcome, Senator Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be very, very brief on this.
Introduce yourself.
So, anyway, I'm Senator Art Rush from District 17. I'm the prime sponsor of SCR 6. I'm sure everybody on this committee is aware of some of the difficult times that our agricultural producers are facing at this time. Our South Dakota Congressional delegation sent a letter to the president back on July. I don't know that they ever received any kind of response or that. You know, I think in supporting their request to the president and letting our agricultural producers here in South Dakota know that we're concerned as well about what's going on and the tariff impact on agricultural prices, that we can do that by passing a resolution which doesn't necessarily have any legal effect, but at least tells people that we're concerned about them. So, stand by for any questions. And what I've handed out was a copy of the letter that our congressional delegation sent to the president.
Thank you for that. Are there any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Seeing none, we'll waive the sponsor rebuttal and we'll move on to questions. Is there questions by the committee? No questions by the committee. At this time, we'll close public testimony and move on to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chair, move to pass.
Senator Klum moves new pass on Senate Concurrent Resolution 6 and seconded by Senator Soholt. Is there any? The chairman will take the prerogative to make a comment, and this is important stuff, and it's been my experience that quite a long while ago we had a president that put an embargo on wheat, and I'm not sure we ever regained that market. And so anytime we put a tariff on and put roadblocks in front of our trading partners, that market doesn't go into a vacuum. It goes to someone else, and we've got to fight to get it back. So I agree with this resolution. At this time, no further discussion or comment. The motion is due pass on Senate Concurrent Resolution 6, moved by Senator Klum, seconded by Senator Soholt. All those in favor will say aye. All those opposed, nay. And Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Blair.
Aye.
Ewing.
Aye.
Klum.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Soholt.
Aye.
Foster is excused. Heinert.
Aye.
Youngberg is excused. Kamak.
Aye.
The vote's unanimous.
The Senate concurrent resolution will move on with the due pass recommendation. Senator Klum moves consent.
Second.
Is seconded by Senator Heinert. All those in favor, aye. Those opposed? SCR 6, we'll move on to the floor with a due pass recommendation on consent calendar. And I believe that concludes the business we had to deal with today. So the motion to adjourn has been made by Senator Klum, seconded by somebody. Senator Soholt, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?